Well, good afternoon, everyone. As well as the Health and Social Care Minister, today I'm pleased to have with us Mr. Ian Mansell, the Director of Regulation at the Department of the Environment, Food and Agriculture. Ian and his team have been performing a critical job relating to workplace safety during this pandemic, and I look forward to his update. Before we get into that, I would like to invite the Minister for the Department of Health and Social Care to cover today's numbers. David.
Thank you, Chief Minister. The total number of tests undertaken now stands at 3,912. The total number of tests completed is 3,866, so we're awaiting 46 results. The total number of confirmed cases now stands at 332. That's one new case since yesterday, and the number of active cases now stands at 35.
And thank you very much, David, and thank you for taking the press conference yesterday evening. It was a wonderful tribute to our fabulous nurses, midwives and carers, to whom we always owe so much, but immeasurably more so during this pandemic. Last Thursday, the Council of Ministers, after the Council of Ministers, I updated you on our thinking about returning to work. There are two parts of that I would like to come back to. Firstly, retail. As I told you last week on the 7th of May, the Council of Ministers agreed that we were close to being able to agree that shops and other retail businesses would open from Monday the 18th of May. We will be considering this again tomorrow at our meeting. As you have seen, the data relating to our key indicators, including active cases and the readiness of our health service, remains strong. But we still need to consider some of the practical implications. I will update you fully tomorrow evening on our discussion. Secondly, offices. Last week, the Council of Ministers agreed that we should encourage employers in our financial, professional and digital services to consider what they would need to do in the event we were able to approve a phased return soon. We want those companies to think about how they would do that safely, about what might need to change in relation to their premises or their practices. I've said on a number of occasions that protection of the lives of our people is the Council of Ministers' number one priority. We hope to be able to make changes to our measures over the coming weeks that will allow more people to return to work, wherever that is, whether that is in retail or in more office-based environments. We need those workplaces to be safe. This is the way that we will minimise the risk of a resurgence of the virus. Colleagues from the Department of the Environment, Food and Agriculture have been working with Public Health to develop advice and other resources that are already on our website in the section labelled Guidance for Businesses and Employers. And I'm sure that Ian will tell us more about this. So over to you, Ian.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Good afternoon. One of the primary functions of the Regulation Directorate is to promote a culture of health and safety awareness across the island's businesses to prevent workplace deaths, injuries, or ill health. In achieving this aim, members of the Directorate's Health and Safety Inspectorate and Environmental Health Team routinely provide advice, information, and guidance to industry and the general public. Awareness of health and safety in the workplace is driven by engaging with employers and their workforce. This promotes a safety culture that builds confidence across business sectors and removes barriers to nurturing professional relationships. It allows effective two-way communication and healthy dialogue, which results in safe working cultures and practices on the island. Being an island community where good links are already established has helped significantly in getting advice and guidance to business operators in these difficult times. Since the implementation of COVID-19 restrictions, the Directorate has continued to liaise frequently with colleagues across government departments, including Public Health, where our environmental health officers are assisting the contact tracing team, the police and COVID-19 call centres, fielding calls of a technical nature, and assisting the Department for Enterprise with advice and guidance for island businesses. The Trading Standards team has also been providing guidance and advice to businesses looking to go back to work. Every effort has been made to keep our island's population safe. Advice and guidance has also been provided to essential businesses that have remained open for business throughout, including food retailers and food producers, banks and manufacturers, as well as businesses that have successfully diversified into operating takeaways, food delivery and pop-up shops, providing essential services for our community. We thank them for adopting the advice and guidance and serving the community in a safe way. In addition, work was carried out with the Department for Enterprise, Public Health and stakeholders to facilitate the safe return to work of the construction sector and associated trades. I would like to thank Brian Butler and the Isle of Man Construction Federation for their valuable input into this process, ensuring the safe return to work of this sector. A dedicated DEFA health and safety hotline was created, 685 881. Take calls in conjunction with the COVID-19 686 262 call centre. Those in the construction and manufacturing industry are also familiar with the worksafe@gov.in email address, which continues to be used as a point of contact. Since we set up the Health and Safety Call Centre, we have received in the region of 130 inquiries across a range of sectors regulated by the Directorate, including construction, manufacturing, food premises, gardening, offices, retail, plumbers and carpet fitters, to name but a few. Most of the calls related to social distancing at work, how activities can be undertaken while social distancing, sharing vans, do I have to go back to work, and servicing equipment. Offices of the Directorate have also undertaken visits to premises and sites to ensure that social distancing measures are being followed. It is good to see that businesses have implemented simple but crucial measures to help keep their workforce and their customers safe. For instance, one-way systems, floor markings, clear signs and door marshals to control flow. These are working extremely well, and we thank businesses and the public for their cooperation. As the Chief Minister advised earlier, we are working alongside colleagues in Public Health and the Department for Enterprise to produce clear guidance for the next phase in the government's plan, which will see the return to work of certain non-essential businesses once restrictions are lifted. It is likely that guidance will centre on social distancing for employees and customers, and frequent hand washing, which has been Public Health's key message from day one. The same dedicated DEFA hotline, 685881, will be used for any queries regarding health and safety in these types of business. Our emphasis remains on promoting a safety culture in the workplace and supporting the implementation of practical safety measures to protect our businesses, our workforce, and our families from risks of coronavirus. Guidance will be provided on the government website, gov.im/coronavirus, which will be the best possible guidance for businesses to follow. It is likely that they will have to make some changes to their daily routines, and we ask that the general public continue to act responsibly and adhere to social distancing measures and frequent hand washing in order to support our businesses, our health services, and to keep infection rates down. Thank you. Chief Minister.
Well, thank you very much, Ian, and do pass on my thanks to your team at the department. Such important work to support our businesses as they prepare to welcome customers and staff back to their premises. Now, I know I've often praised you, the great Manx public, for everything you've done to suppress the virus in our community, and I'm now calling on our businesses to help us keep that curve down by ensuring that offices, shops and other places of work are as safe as they possibly can be. As our Director of Public Health and others have said at these press conferences, social distancing and hand washing will always be our best ally. But we realise that this is not always possible all of the time. Where it isn't, we need businesses to be innovative. Might staggered start times help? Are there things to be done around communal workspaces? Where possible, is continued remote working still the answer? Businesses are best placed to make the decisions. Our teams will be there to advise and, if necessary, to enforce. I will now take questions. And first today, we have Sam Turton from Isle of Man Newspapers. Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. We've had two questions in from our readers, which we're going to go over today. The first one relates to the borders. We're not expecting them to open anytime soon. This person wants to know if it's possible that if Britain's viral load continues at the rate it's at or doesn't decrease quickly enough, whether we could open the borders with other countries, and if we have an idea of which other countries they could be I think they're particularly more interested in Ireland, actually, was their key focus on that one.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before, Sam. Whilst we don't have the crystal ball to say when we'll be able to open our borders, if the UK still has a significant number of cases and new spread, then it may not be the UK, and maybe the island of Ireland might be the first country that we open our borders to. But we'll obviously take advice nearer the time. But sadly, I feel that's going to be quite some time off yet. But yeah, we'll obviously be looking this on. I don't think it'll be the entire world on day one when we do decide to open the borders. There'll be a number of measures, and maybe a certain country first, depending on their record of spread. For example, when we discuss the UK implementing its borders, which it says it's going to be bringing in at the beginning of June, they have given an exemption for Isle of Man residents going from the Isle of Man into the UK. And part of the reasoning is because our level of cases is so low that we wouldn't cause them a problem. We also have the Common Travel Area Agreement too, but our level of cases is so low that they are not making exemptions. So they are making an exemption for the Isle of Man. And your second question, Sam?
The second question came from a retired gentleman whose wife's visa is up at the end of this month. And as it stands, she would have to go back to Thailand to receive a new visa. And he was wondering whether there's any flexibility available within the system to allow for visas to be extended beyond their current expiry date, because obviously at this stage, there's no saying when they will be able to actually return to the island.
Yeah, well, I think I've received that email today, or maybe something slightly differently. But if that person wants to contact me, I'm more than happy to have it investigated. I know we have extended the work permits of people coming to live in the Isle of Man from further afield, and therefore I would expect that, if possible, we should be able to help the person, because they've effectively lost 2 months where they haven't been able to do anything. So if you want to send on their details, Sam, then more than happy if you send it on to the team in our press team, and then I'll have it investigated. Thanks for that, Sam.
Yes.
Okay, we've got Ewan Gore next from Manx Radio. Ewan, hello there.
Pass to my Chief Minister. My question is of the Health Minister, please.
Okay, no problems. David.
Hello, Ewan.
Hello, Minister. And just firstly, I'd like to ask you, who's undertaking the independent investigation at Abbotswood on behalf of the DHSC? And what is the scope of that investigation, if you are able to share those details?
So the information I can give out, the party has been appointed, and Expo will be undertaking the investigation on behalf of the department. In relation to the scope of the investigation, is in relation to a registrations and inspection investigation. I can't share any further details than that at this current time. But as I mentioned at the press conference yesterday, there's several strands of investigation. There's investigation around safeguarding, around registration of inspections, those are the main two tenants.
Thank you. And I wanted to ask you, on Monday, you made a statement where you said you're not going to proactively publish information to do with Abbotswood, and you stressed the importance of speaking to families first. But considering this is probably the greatest loss of life the island has seen linked since Summerland, do you think that was why were you saying you're not going to proactively inform the public on this?
What I've said is we will put information out as and when it's ready to go out. The question came off the back of another question saying, why didn't I just release all the information at the start of that particular press conference? I'm not going to be in a position to do that. I will answer questions quite happily on Abbotswood where and when I can. But what is important is that the families and those who we are moving out of Abbotswood are the first to know about decisions and what is happening. In terms of the investigation, that is ongoing. And while it is ongoing, I'm going to be exceptionally limited in what I can say about those investigations. But as I have said earlier today, when I did Man in Line with Andy Wint, R&I reports generally are public reports, and so I would expect this to be no different. But while the process is ongoing, there is going to be limitations around what can be said.
Minister, apologies. I just wanted to pick you up on one thing you said there. You mentioned the communication with families. We've received numerous reports of, yes, there were attempts to communicate with families by the DHSC, but in terms of the future care fees of their loved ones who are moving out of Abbotswood, they remain very much in the dark. We also understand an apology has been made subsequently by your department. Do you think the communication has been acceptable over that issue?
things have needed to be done in a logical and staged manner. We got to the situation, as I have explained, where we couldn't any longer continue to occupy the building. We needed to make a decision around moving of the residents because we hadn't been able to agree a lease agreement. And from there, things moved relatively fast. The first and most important thing to actually communicate with the families was what was happening to their loved ones, where they were going. And then from that, obviously, flowed other discussions around what happens with fees, because obviously people were concerned, were they continuing to pay in relation to Abbotswood? Would they charge the NHS fee? And that feeds off that. So it's been different stages of communication. And I believe in relation to fees, all the families are being currently informed about the position there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ewan. And now we move on to Leanne Cook from 3FM. Leanne.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question is actually for Ian, if I may.
Yeah.
So, Ian, could you give any guidance to those who have been working from home and have now been advised or instructed they should return to work but don't feel comfortable doing so?
Hi, Leanne. Yeah, that's highly appropriate. I can see that we are going to get lots of questions of that nature, and I suppose it all depends on what kind of work it is, whether people can still work from home. If they can't work from home, then what measures the employer is putting in place to allow them to work either from home or from the workplace itself. That is where the guidance that we're working through with Public Health and the Department for Enterprise will take that into consideration. We will not have an answer for every single situation, but we will be able to go away, talk to the employer, talk to the employee, and see if we can accommodate both, if you like. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And my second question is either for the Chief Minister or the Health Minister. We've had someone get in touch to query if the government has a plan or any advice for employees of Abbotswood who are currently facing job uncertainty.
Well, obviously, there are a number of people who will lose their jobs at Abbotswood, and that's most regrettable. I'm sure the Department of Health and Social Care, myself, are concerned about that. And we would ask them to get in contact with the Department for Enterprise to see if any of the schemes that are available could help them. And also from a retraining or other jobs point of view, and what the availability is in this sector that they're working in. I don't know if there's anything, David, you want to add on that?
Yes, just to add to that, Leanne, obviously the situation that Abbotswood is in is regrettable. In relation to staff from Abbotswood, the department is also looking to see if we can assist in terms of offering bank shifts to those individuals, or whether in fact there is actually vacancies within DHSC itself that we could actually offer to those individuals. Obviously, that's not going to be the case for everyone. We won't be able to take on a full complement of Abbotswood staff, but there are things going on within the department to look at that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We now move on to Simon Richardson from Business 365 magazine. Simon.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question, we're still hearing reports from some small companies who say they haven't received MIRA support payments in respect of employees. Is there still something of a backlog, or is the scheme largely on track now?
Well, from the information I've received, and I get this update every day, the number of outstanding cases have considerably dropped because we've had teams working 7 days a week on this. So I think there are some that have obviously fallen between the cracks, some that have problems maybe with certain elements of whether it's NI or tax or a problem. We've amended the scheme to try and ensure that more people can take advantage of the number of schemes that are available. And if someone's been given if you haven't had anything back from the Department for Enterprise, I would encourage them to go back with their case to put it back in again in case there's been a technical problem, but the vast majority of cases have now been dealt with and the vast majority of people have been paid. But obviously when you're turning around six brand new schemes in such a short time, I appreciate it's hard for those few people who have fallen between the cracks, but if they resubmit, then of course I'm sure the Department for Enterprise team will do their utmost to handle it as quickly as possible.
Okay, thank you. My second question is for Ian, please.
Okay.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Ian. My question is this. In terms of workplace safety and the policing of it, how much do you have to rely on whistleblowers in order to carry out investigations over matters of social distancing, etc.? Presumably, there is huge pressure at the current time on your department and your officers.
Yes, that is true. We do take calls of anonymous nature, if you can say that word, and we follow up on that. Obviously, sometimes it can be very sensitive. We don't go in heavy-handed. We speak to the employee, we speak to the employer, and if necessary, we can carry out visits. Hopefully, we won't have to carry out that many visits, but we are equipped to do that if necessary. And reassure people that we'll do our utmost to get people feeling safe in the workplace.
Thank you, Ian.
Okay, thank you very much. We now move on to Paul Moulton from MTTV. Paul.
Thank you, Chief Minister. I'd like to speak to the Health Minister, please.
Okay, David.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hello there. You hopefully can update us on the information from yesterday about you weren't sure where that data was correct or you had all the full data about the person who had contracted.
Yes, more than happy to do so. Just for clarity, I haven't got the data around the individual today either because it's just come in before you use up a question. It depends, as I said, when the result comes through in the day, sure, whether I'll have it in time for that day's briefing or not. In relation to yesterday's case, I do now have the background. It is a pure community case. It's not linked to any other cases. It's not within a nursing home environment before that question gets asked. It is someone who presented, was tested, and came back, and it's not linked to any of the returning industries either.
I mean, as an aside, we keep getting these now, ones coming in. It's just ones. And again, I've asked, I suppose, in the past, you must be either making a jigsaw up and connecting the dots or something, or this must be worrying you that they're coming randomly at you.
Well, as I've made absolutely clear, yeah, Paul, that's exactly why we mustn't be complacent in anything we do. We may have small numbers of cases, but there is still a level of community transmission out there. And that's why I always emphasise the point, as I think I banged on like a broken record again yesterday's press conference, we mustn't get complacent because of the low numbers, because there is still a level of community transmission out there. And we will continue to see cases popping up where we don't know where they've come from. The odd one case here and there is not something to be concerned about. What I'd be more concerned about is if we saw a spike and a sustained spike in cases where we didn't know where the transmission was occurring. But again, it does emphasise why the message is we should not be complacent about these things.
I think a lot of people think they're banging on, but we're asking these questions because obviously things change. And the other one is about the 111. We've got very, again, I think I asked it two or three years ago, numbers are very low. People can get a test, right, whatever, very quickly now. Are you then, trying to self-isolate now, or are you going straight for the test now that we have so few? And also on the same thing, people concerned we're not testing, i.e. going out and using the full 400. Are you able to do 400?
Well, hang on, it's 200 first of all, Paul. The testing capacity is 200 per day. In relation to that, we have the testing strategy in place. Because of the low numbers, because we did build into the testing strategy what we expected to be going through the community and 111, that is a lot lower than we were expecting. So we are looking again to see what else we can do to bring up that capacity to be using the 200 a day. Because you're quite right, test, and trace are the two key things we have in our tools. Anyone who rings 111 and presents with appropriate symptoms is referred to testing, just as they always have been. We haven't stopped our community testing. But the other thing we do that is absolutely key is we still do that trace back, and anyone who's been in contact with that person that is relevant to that case is advised to self-isolate.
originally people just were told to self-isolate, weren't they? Are they now just going straight for the test now?
No, people who were not showing appropriate symptoms were just told to self-isolate. Those that were showing the symptoms have always, since day one, been referred to a test, and that's continuing.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, Paul. We now move on to Josh Stokes from ITV. Josh.
Thank you, Chief Minister. My question is also to the Health Minister, please.
Okay. David.
Hello, Josh.
Hi, Health Minister. First of all, can you tell us how many people have now been moved out of Abbotswood and clarify where they've been moved to? And is there a timeline on now getting those residents settled into their new home?
So there is 9 residents that were moved yesterday. There was 15 residents as of yesterday in the home in total. 9 moved yesterday, and I believe the remaining residents moved today. So that process should now be complete. They've gone into the sites. We've explained before in Nobles, we've utilised the old private patients unit block up there, the old PPU up at Nobles, also been able to use parts of Newlands as well. And then we will start to look at where we can move them to as a more permanent residence. I believe in a couple of cases that has already been done, we've already identified, but what is important is we look at each person individually. Those residents that are in Abbotswood, we need to assess what their needs are and ensure that we fit them to a home that is right for them. It is a very disconcerting time, I appreciate, both for them, because Abbotswood was their home, and also their families, but it is important we get it right. So we will do it as quickly as we can, but for us, the main thing is to make sure it's right for those residents.
Okay, thank you. And my second question, I think a lot of people hearing the news that residents will be moved into other care homes around the island gave people an uneasy feeling given what happened at Abbotswood. Is there any concern that by doing this, the department may be exposing other care homes to the virus in some way?
No, because we have a very firm process around this. So anyone who has been diagnosed, before they're moved to another home, they have to take 2 COVID tests. So they have to be tested not once, but twice. So the double negative before they will be moved into another environment.
Thank you. And just finally, are you able to tell us the number of Abbotswood residents who currently still have coronavirus and the number of residents who are presumed recovered?
The latest figures I have, although they are in the process of being revised, so I will put that, to use the words health warning, on it for you, Josh. The figure in terms of recovered I have is 7. There was 7 currently classified as recovered. And we currently, I think at the moment, have... currently active 26, but that figure is in the process of being revised, so I will probably be in a better position tomorrow to give you a more up-to-date figure on that.
Okay, thank you, Minister.
Thanks.
And thank you, Josh. We now move on to Chris Kay from Energy FM. Chris.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. If I could speak to the Health Minister first, please.
Yeah, no problems.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon. I'd just like to ask what the Health Minister, what the government's strategy would be if coronavirus were to get into another care home on the island. Has that strategy changed since what's happened at Abbotswood?
There's very firm strategies in place in terms of infection control and the processes that need to be followed. The processes to be followed would be exactly the same as Abbotswood in terms of the infection control team going in, DHSC going in to assist the home where the home requires it. There is already policies around PPE, and we would make sure that those policies were robust within the home and the PPE was being used correctly. So, for instance, to give you an example, Chris, as I mentioned the other week, I can't identify the home because there's only one person in that home, as I've explained several times, and that would identify the individual. We did have one other case in that home. We went in, we tested those that were relevant to that individual person. All those tests have come back negative, and the processes and procedures within that home were robust and have clearly shown to have prevented any further spread.
Okay, thank you. And my second question for the Chief Minister, please.
Thank you, Chris.
I just want to know In terms of special permits granted by the Chief Secretary to allow people into the Isle of Man, are there any plans for these to be made more obtainable for employers who are looking to recover as quickly as possible from what will have inevitably been a very difficult period for them?
I'm afraid I missed 90% of what you said, Chris. It was all about permits for coming in into the island. Could you try again, please? You've got a very bad line.
Yes, apologies for that. Just in terms of those special permits granted by the Chief Secretary, will these be made more attainable for employers who are looking to recover from what's a very difficult period for them?
Again, I missed the middle part of that, but will the Chief Secretary... I mean, the Chief Secretary can only issue special passes for a certain criteria. Now, if we feel we can move forward and amend that criteria, then we will. As I say, all the rules and regulations that we have are constantly under review. We're always looking to make changes where the data backs that up that we can and it's safe for everyone. And obviously, I've said today, we'll be making a number of announcements tomorrow on changes that the Council of Ministers feel that, you know, can now take place. The permits for people to work on the island will obviously... is something that we can review in the future, though it's not long since we've increased it for UK key workers to be able to come in. But I would stress the number of key workers coming to the island is still very low. The figure that gets bandied about from time to time and totally confused is the number of includes people from the steam packet, the mail plane, the BOC drivers that bring oxygen to the Isle of Man. These are people that 90% of them never set foot out of our ports. They just come in, drop off and leave the island again, and or deliver. We had to get a number of names for delivery drivers of wagons for BOC for our oxygen. So the number of permits that are given out for people to come in as key workers to the island is incredibly low for people that physically go to a house on the island. But as I say, everything's up for review all the time as the data improves and we take steps and we don't see any further increases in the number of cases, then we can allow more and more to happen on the island.
Thank you, and apologies for the incredibly poor signal.
Yeah, no problem at all. Right, we move on to Alex Bell from BBC. Alex.
And Chief Minister. Sorry, I think I was muted there. I'd just like to know what discussions the Council of Ministers are undertaking concerning human rights following criticism from advocates about the treatment of groups, including those in custody and people who have been quarantined in island hotels.
Well, obviously, all the advice we've had is from our own Attorney General. We haven't discussed it recently because when we initially did it, it was... and we were advised it was all human rights compliant. So if someone has a different view and that's their choice to challenge, if they wish, then that will be for the courts to decide. But we obviously were advised before we took these measures to ensure that we had the powers. These are powers, I would hasten to add, we didn't use lightly. We are in the middle of a world pandemic outbreak, and certain things had to be done to protect for the greater good of the whole of the population of the Isle of Man. But we certainly didn't do it lightly, but we equally did it with advice that we were protected. And I think all Timwell members received a letter on the legal position on certain events that have been happened, such as the closing of the borders and the repatriation, from our legal experts.
Well, that ties into my next question, actually, because my understanding of how human rights law works is that within the remit of a state of emergency, as the Isle of Man is in, certain liberties can be suspended. But certainly under the European Convention of Human Rights, any suspension of liberties should, and I quote, be only to the extent strictly required by the exigencies of the situation. Now, we've had the Health Minister today saying one small case here and there isn't something necessarily to worry about. Indeed, you've confirmed that our level of cases is now so low that it's not deemed to be a threat to our neighbours in terms of border security. So is a state of emergency still necessary on the Isle of Man?
Absolutely. Don't take my words out of context, Alex. I said our state of infection compared with the UK our poles apart, and therefore someone coming from the Isle of Man is not going to have an adverse effect on the United Kingdom, whereas clearly the other way around it would. So obviously we're looking to move our legislation from the Emergency Act to different types of legislation going forward, because the sooner we can come out of the emergency, the better. But for the time being, that's something that we have to ask our Attorney General's chambers to work on and take forward. But we have been reassured that everything done to date, and I can assure people we always try and ensure everything we do is legal, it's being reviewed all the time. And if we can make the changes, we do so with the data and small steps at a time. But the legal advice that we've had is that everything that has been done in a correct form.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that's the last of the questions. So now for this evening's shout-outs. And today's first shout-out goes to 16-year-old Matt Cool. Matt set himself the challenge to cycle a staggering 366 kilometres, 1 kilometre for each day of this year. That our health workers will keep our 1 kilometre for each day of the year that our health workers will keep our island safe. And the aim was to raise funds to purchase vouchers from local businesses to be distributed to our frontline health workers. And Matt smashed his £500 target, with the current total standing at just over £2,000. So a great job, Matt. The second shout out for today is a nomination we've received for the wonderful Russian Silver Band. They recently held a virtual concert on Facebook, which was very well received by everyone and lifted many spirits. The concert has been seen by well over 12,000 people from Tennessee to Adelaide, a bit of a bigger audience than the normal concerts at the Port Air and Arts Centre. Keeping our community knitted together through events like this is so important, and this demonstrates that by adapting to our current times, there can also be opportunities. So well done, Russian Silver Band. And last but not least, the final shout out for today is for the volunteers of Project Scrubs UCM. And this is a group of UCM staff and the fashion industry professionals on the Isle of Man who have made 250 colourful scrubs for the Manx healthcare workers. The colours of the scrubs were carefully chosen to reflect the skills and values of the island's healthcare workers. Peach for compassion, yellow for hope, red for strength, green for safety, purple for wisdom, blue for faith, and brown for security. Fantastic work all. Well done. Thank you very much. That's all for this evening. All being well, I shall be back tomorrow to brief you on the outcome of the Council of Ministers meeting. There is a full agenda for the meeting. Our regular review of the measures in place will of course take up a significant portion of that. Among other things we will be considering will be the possible resumption of more of our retail sector from Monday, proposals on the resumption of some additional sports, including archery, target shooting, paddle sports, crown green and lawn bowls, and the important question of gatherings. The Minister for Infrastructure will also be joining me to update you on work undertaken by his department and what's coming up. Until then, have a good evening, and whatever you do tomorrow, please stay safe and make the right decisions for you, your family and our island. Stay safe. Thank you very much.